The Guardian.
In this week's show, we look at the wonder material graphene. What is it? What's it good for? And is it all it's cracked up to be? We also explore the challenges and pitfalls in taking graphene out of the laboratory and into products, and ask whether graphene, first isolated by researchers in Manchester, is likely to be a commercial success story for the UK. In the studio, we have materials scientist and author of Stuff Matters, Professor Mark Miodovnik of University College London, and physicist and blogger on science and science policy, Professor Richard Jones from the University of Sheffield. Joining us down the line is Cinzia Kaziragi, professor in nanoscience at Manchester University, who also works closely with the university's National Graphene Institute. I began by asking Mark, what exactly is graphene?
Well, graphene is a form of carbon, and the two most kind of familiar forms of carbon in your life are probably the graphite on your pencil, so that's a form of carbon, and if you have any diamond jewellery, then that's also carbon. So these are two pure forms of carbon. They have incredibly different properties. One's a lubricant and can mark a piece of paper, and the other one's very, very hard indeed and transparent. And graphene is another form of carbon. And the thing that makes it very special is it's a two-dimensional form, so it only exists as a two-dimensional sheet. It is just carbon linked up into a hexagonal structure, but because of that structure, the bonds that form are extremely strong. So it has the title of the strongest material in the world. We can debate that later because a lot of people have got a bit of a problem with that. Mm-hmm. It is certainly incredibly strong, and it's incredibly elastic. It's got amazing thermal conduction properties, so it can really wick heat away very, very fast indeed. Mm-hmm. It can conduct electricity very fast indeed. And so it has much better conduction than, let's say, copper or even gold. Mm. And those, that combination of wonder properties, it's the best. It got everyone very excited.
Cinzia, can you tell me a little bit about how graphene was discovered? Because it was researchers at the institute that you're at that first isolated this new form of carbon.
Yes. So for many, many years, people were believed that graphene was not existing because from a theoretical point of view, from doing calculation, it appears that this material was not stable under ambient conditions. But some scientists were quite stubborn and didn't believe so. And so they started to take graphite, the material that we have in the pencil, and then try to peel it off with a simple piece of tape and trying to make it thinner and thinner and thinner. And this is how graphene was discovered. So after spending many, many years peeling off pieces of graphite, they were able to identify just a single layer of graphite.
And what is the significance of this, Mark? I mean, in terms of actually finally being able to isolate this, it seemed to lead to sort of a boom of just excitement in the field.
I think that's partly about human culture. We are a very excitable type of, you know, being, aren't we? We throughout our history, we've made materials. It's our thing. It's what we do, right? The Stone Age, you know, the Iron Age, the Steel Age, the Silicon Age. So a new material, a wonder material, I mean, that's bound to get us really excited. And I think rightly so. I mean, you know, materials are wonderful. They're all around us. Why wouldn't we get excited about this new shiny material, which we don't quite know what it's for yet in our lives? And maybe we can find out, and maybe it's got a very huge part to play, and maybe not. And that's what's so exciting at the moment. We don't actually know whether it's going to be the next big thing or not.
Richard, were you excited when they discovered this? I mean, then it's followed by Nobel Prize for the discovery for Andre Geim and Kostya.
Yeah, it was a very, very exciting moment for science. I think people really recognised as soon as those early papers came out that there was something very exciting happening, that this material was really getting physicists' interest particularly. The electrons in the material are behaving in a very odd way, or quite unlike other materials. So I think, going back to that time, great excitement. And I think great excitement when Andre Geim and Nosselov won the Nobel Prize.
And Cinzia, what are you doing now in the lab? So you're working with graphene now
on a daily basis trying to sort of probe its properties. Is that right? I mean, what's happening in the National Graphene Institute? What's the sort of key areas that you're looking at now?
Oh, we are very busy. So in my lab in particular, we work with graphene in solution phase. So this material is not just a solid crystal, but it comes in solution. So in liquid phase and in a form of an ink. And basically, we designed the ink to be suitable for printing, so you can actually print the ink like with a normal desktop printer. And because the ink is conductive and has these fantastic properties, you can actually make devices and you know, many applications just using this ink. And the ink itself can be used, or the material in solution phase can be used for many, many other applications. So in the National Graphene Institute, we have really big research area around using this type of material for energy storage, for batteries and supercapacitors, and for composite, of course. So basically you mix this graphene solution processed material with a polymer, and you can improve, you know, electrical properties or mechanical properties, depending on the application that you have in mind.
And so is it that there's still a lot to be discovered in terms of the basic properties of graphene, or are you now looking more at taking graphene and creating new sort of applications and ways of using it?
I think both. I mean, this is a really a wonder material. Every time we find something new, even from a fundamental point of view. But I would say that now most of these properties are very well known, very well studied, so there are most of the research, I would say, is towards developing products and applications. So there is more and more interaction with industry, even within the Graphene Flagship, for example, which is a European program to, you know, bring graphene out of the lab into commercial products.
And what is the thing about graphene that fascinates you most? I mean, we've had a lot of talk here about it being this wonder material and this sort of, you know, exciting new form of carbon. But what is it that captivates you about its properties and its potential?
Well, personally, it's everything. You know, it's not the most strongest material, but it's the most conductive. You know, all these super outstanding properties all combined into one material. I think this is really unique.
That's great. Well, let's take a break here for an advert, and we'll come back and discuss perhaps some of the problems and pitfalls in harnessing this wonder material and turning it actually into things. So, Mark, we've heard a bit about the different properties that graphene has, and the it's the most this, it's the most that. So far, most people might be familiar with it being used in tennis rackets. I mean, it seems a long stretch almost from there to something a bit more sexy, as it were, in terms of application.
Yeah, so I think the tennis racket thing, when this is about composite technology, and you know, we're familiar with composite carbon fibre, so people know that term, and that's a different form of carbon being reinforced by a plastic, and that has an amazing properties itself, carbon fiber composite. So people have swapped out carbon fibers with graphene flakes, and that turns out to work, and it's got decent properties. Nothing probably to really shout about except for the name, you know, just to be the first into a product. I think in a way the graphene community suffers a bit from not having a monopoly on people developing this stuff. I mean, if you look back to De Beers and the way that diamonds became this big thing at the beginning of the 19th century, they got hold of marketing and they closed down the market, they monopolized it, and they only let diamonds have applications that they controlled, and they controlled supply. And graphene, in a way, it may suffer, in a sense, from people using it for, you know, in anything and everything, and therefore diluting that wonder name in a way. And let's not forget that people don't quite know its toxicity yet either. So it is worth, I think, especially in this day and age, being a bit circumspect about getting graphene out there too fast.
Richard, does the UK have a problem in commercialising things that are invented here? Because there has been a lot of discussion about how, you know, most of the patents around graphene are not from the UK.
Yes, I think the UK has a problem with industrial R&D. You know, it's great to make things in an academic laboratory. To turn that into a product takes a lot of work. It takes lots of people working, lots of equipment, and it's the sort of thing that's done at scale by large companies. UK has two world-class R&D companies, both of which are pharmaceutical companies, so that's not really in this area. So if we look at the places that are investing serious amounts of industrial R&D, it's typically Korea, it's companies like Samsung, it's companies that are connected with the industries that graphene might find a place in. So I think it's important. I mean, nobody really wants to commercialise graphene. People who want to make money out of things want a property. They want a conducting electrode. They want a battery that's better than existing batteries. They want some property. There's nothing that says that graphene has to be the solution to those problems. So one needs to be driven by an application, a problem, a big industry, something like, you know, the battery industry, something like the semiconductor industry, the display industry, that's coming and saying, we've got a problem that needs to be solved. Graphene could be one choice for doing it. Other materials could work too. Then lots and lots of work needs to go in to make things happen.
Do you see the UK changing its way of doing this? I mean, do you see us filling that gap? Do you see us actually setting up those points of research?
I think it would be possible to do it. It would take a lot of will and a lot of money. And I think the scale of money that needs to be applied to research and development at the commercial end is very large. And so the kind of typical places that people go for money, venture capital, they find it quite difficult to put in the large sums of money for quite long periods. These have much longer payoff times than, you know, if you do a kind of dot-com company or an ICT company, you can expect to get your money back in 5 years, maybe. It takes much longer. So it's this question of large amounts of patient capital that the UK doesn't seem enormously good at having.
Yeah, I mean, so I've talked to these representatives from these big wealth funds. So around the world, especially oil producing countries, have these enormous wealth funds, and they kind of occasionally get scientists in the door to ask you what that you think is worth investing in. And when I mention graphene, they ask about timescales. And I say, well, of course, you know, most new materials that start from a Nobel Prize discovery for in the lab take historically 15, 20 years to pan out into industrialization. I mean, that's the history. And they just shake their heads. I mean, their horizons for investment, even though they've got hundreds of billions of pounds to invest, is 3 to 5 years. And that's so weird. And you think, well, why? Because, you know, why wouldn't you invest in this amazing material? And it turns out, well, my experience of it has been that those people who make those decisions, it's their record of investment that is investigated every 3 to 5 years. And so unless they can get a return on their money 3 to 5 years, they will be sacked.
Yeah.
So we've got this weird capitalistic system whereby we have a lot of money in the world that could go into a place like Manchester, which in the UK is the place in the world with all the skills and understanding of this material. But to get those people to invest in that at a large scale with that sort of investment is extremely difficult.
Cynthia, as someone working at the National Graphene Institute and working with this material in the lab, do you feel frustrated that there might be difficulties in getting it out there into sort of real-world applications, as it were?
I don't think we feel frustrated. I mean, we are aware that, you know, it takes some time, so we need to follow the, you know, the technology readiness level. So we start from 1 and we need to go to 9, and often in between there is a gap, you know, because maybe we can develop a prototype in the lab, but then we need to find a company that is willing to put some money and to start producing this prototype on a larger scale and so on. So there is a little bit of frustration, but on the other side, you know, this is how it works, and you need to go step by step, starting from TRL 1 and going from TRL 9 and trying to engage with companies as much as you can.
Do you worry that the sort of intellectual sort of hub for graphene in Manchester is going to miss out if we don't sort of start putting money into that side of graphene development? The financial gains are going to end up happening in other countries around the world and not in the UK.
Well, you know, we need to be realistic, I think. I mean, we are, for example, competing with countries like China, where they put a lot more money than UK. They have started already having pilot plants for graphene productions and so on. So, yeah, of course, there is the risk. But on the other side, we have the expertise and the know-how. We have good companies working with us. So we have to see. I don't think it's so dramatic at the moment.
Richard, what is the role of spin-out companies in this? Because often it's university spin-out companies that seem to help to bridge that gap between taking a product that's been developed in the lab and sort of edging it towards a commercial product.
Yes, I mean, there have been quite a lot of good spin-out companies in the material world, and, you know, some have come from Manchester, and I think, for example, of NanoCo is a good Manchester company that's developed some really good international markets in quantum dots per display. So actually, in some ways, they've shown that you can make an impact in that area, despite it being dominated by the Far East. So I think spin-out companies do have a role to play, but their scale is small, and they generally need help to take themselves to the next stage. There is an issue. Lots of UK spin-outs end up being successful and then being bought out by overseas companies. And they're looked at. They have great intellectual property, great know-how, and overseas companies find that very attractive. So that's often, you know, it's very good for the founders and the universities and the venture capitalists, because they make a bit of a return out of it. I think the country as a whole might regret that the growth of that industry often happens elsewhere. So it's this question of why do we not manage to find the money to be able to take successful ideas and take them to a stage that will make an impact on the UK economy. It'll really make a difference to kind of jobs, productivity, growth, all those things that we worry about at the moment.
Time again for another advert.
So Mark, just discussing graphene, we've heard a lot about its potential and the excitement around it, the fact that overseas investors are certainly looking at it with excitement. Is it just a load of hype?
Well, only history will tell. I think that's the exciting thing. From a material scientist perspective like myself, you know, there's nothing like this. There's so much interest and we're discovering new things all the time, and there's a lot of talk about what it could do, graphene. But will it do it? So strength. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, it's the strongest material in the world. Some people say that. It says that on many websites. I think it says that on the Wikipedia website.
It says it on the tin. Must be true.
But I think that's clearly not true. I mean, because what is strength? Strength is many things. It's not going to have any kind of impact in construction anytime soon, because it's strong at the atomic bond level. It's strong maybe at a kind of tiny, tiny nanoscopic level. But no one has proved that you can take that strength at that level and make it strong at the scale that we're all talking about, which is, you know, a new aircraft that would be lighter and thinner and much more energy efficient. And especially when you look into what makes things strong, it isn't actually just the bonds. There's a misconception often that perhaps is understandable, that people think that strong things have strong bonds, but that's not the case. Steel is probably the strongest material around that we use in our everyday lives. And that's because of its defects. It's not because of its bonds. It's because of the tiny defects inside it. And so material science is much more complicated than just this has got a strong bond strength, so it's the strongest material in the world. And I think that's been a bit of a pity that we haven't kind of used it as an opportunity to widen people's appreciation of actually the steel itself, which is, you know, the mass production of steel is a UK triumph and has driven ahead the world in a way that has actually been a revolution. And whether graphene lives up to that, we will see. But it will require, my guess is, 10, 15 years to pan out.
Mm. Richard, what do you think? Is it all hype?
Well, as a physics discovery, it's not all hype. It's a great physics discovery. Whether the impact it makes on the world, that's more difficult to judge. I mean, the questions about strength are really interesting, because Mark's absolutely right. It's the transition from the properties at the nanoscale to the properties at the macroscale that are really difficult. And we've seen this before. There have been other materials. We've seen carbon nanotubes. We've seen other types of composite materials. Even, you know, when I was a student a long time ago, people were very excited about so-called molecular composites that were very strong single molecules in a matrix. And all the time, it turns out actually to be very difficult to get the full theoretical strength that you'd expect, the full theoretical properties in real material. So in composites, sheet, anything that's a molecular sheet will tend to want to clump together like a big stack. So there's always a gulf between the properties that you'd expect if you do the theory and you work out what you might, you know, in an ideal world, what the strength you could get would be, and what you actually do if you do it in the lab. And then there's a huge and exciting field about trying to make these composite materials, but it's difficult, and it's difficult for really quite fundamental physical reasons, actually. The reasons why sheets like to stick together down to some pretty basic physics, and it takes quite a lot of subtlety to kind of prise them apart. So I think, it's wrong to say it's all hype, but it would be wrong to say that these gains are going to be easily won.
Cynthia, do you find yourself having to tell people when you say, "Oh, I work with graphene," to sort of just temper their excitement a little bit, or do you just encourage it?
Well, people are really curious usually, so they want to know, you know, which kind of products are you? We will make, we will have, what I'm working on, and so on. And because I work around inks, I think it's easy actually for people to understand what you can do when you have an ink, you can print and make some flexible electronics. And I think in this area, we actually have already some prototypes and so on. So we can actually show to people that, yeah, the material is not just an exciting material with the properties as you read everywhere, but you can actually do something that works. Then, of course, as I say, this is maybe TRL 5 or 6, and we still need to reach 9. So there is still some work to do, but at least we can show that, yes, we can integrate this material into products and the product works. So I think it's quite exciting to see that you can do things.
Yeah, I mean, so what I love about graphene is that as you sort of go around the science world, you meet people at conferences, and they will spill the beans about the latest material property that graphene has discovered, and with a hushed tone. And I love that wonder, because that's why we're all in it, isn't it? That's why we do what we do. It's why we're in the lab day after day. And the latest one, which I remember very clearly because I was examining a PhD, and my co-examiner said to me, "Water goes straight through graphene oxide." And he had literally just come from, you know, Manchester. And it was just, I hadn't heard that water can go straight through graphene oxide, but pretty much nothing else can. And it makes it a perfect sieve material, potentially. And if you think about the applications of sieves, it seems a mundane thing. But, you know, desalination of water, for a start, is a huge thing. And we're going to have water shortages this century. I mean, we already have them. It appears that it will grow. It's very likely that it will grow. So it's not about hype. That's about excitement. Yeah. I think the point where it gets to hype is when you start inventing applications that people don't need, in my view, like you know, bendable, foldable mobile phones. Like, they're great. Mobile phones are great. But do we really need a bendable, foldable? Do we? Is that what's going to? To me, that's where the hype comes in. You know, I distinguish hype from excitement. This might be my own distinction, which is one is where the application I think is a very laudable one, like desalination of water, which mm-hmm. would benefit the whole world, and foldable mobile phones, where I feel it's just a set of companies wanting to make money out of something which essentially is just sort of creating demand.
It's sort of just sticking the name graphene on it so people can say my phone has got graphene in it, kind of.
Yeah.
Richard, you gave a few examples earlier of previous materials that had been met with excitement, which perhaps didn't end up delivering quite what was expected. I mean, looking back into the commercialization of various other materials in the last sort of 30, 40 years, is there something that we can learn from in terms of graphene's commercialization? Is there like a path that we can see from another material where we can say, oh, look, well, it's going to take 20 years to do this and 30 years to do that?
Well, I mean, there is a lesson. There's a lesson about timing. And, you know, carbon fiber composites are actually very interesting. You know, carbon fiber composites were, you know, they emerged in the lab in the 60s. And you think it's only now that they're, you know, in terms of commercial airliners, it's only now that that's really starting to take off. It takes a long time. The reason it takes a long time is because new materials have to fit into processes. You know, they have to fit into existing manufacturing processes. They have to play nicely with lots of other types of materials, and it often takes a long time for that to happen. Again, you know, I'm an academic physicist, so I kind of think that you know, academic science is where everything revolves around, but you know, as I've generally learned as I've grown a bit older, that's not actually true. You know, the business of actually engineering products is very difficult. It takes a huge amount of craft and skill, and you know, things fit into a big ecosystem that's already there. So, you know, desalination, I absolutely agree with Mark. I mean, if you're looking for great applications, clean water's a really good one. But, you know, there are already desalination plants exist. Reverse osmosis is a process. It works. You can get membranes already that do it. They don't do it. You know, you could think of ways in which they could be improved. So at all times, you have to think about how's my new material going to fit in to this existing infrastructure, the existing way people do things. And that's, I think, why new materials have often taken some time to make the impact they deserve. And some of them haven't actually made an impact at all.
Are you optimistic about the future of graphene broadly and also in the UK? I mean, we sort of talked earlier about the UK's difficulties in terms of putting the money in to make sure that the returns are felt here. Are you optimistic about the future?
I don't think it's a given. I don't think it's a given at all that, you know, if graphene does have many lucrative opportunities, that the UK will be in a position to translate its academic lead into a commercial lead.
Mark?
I think we need to put a lot more resources, not just into graphene in this country, but into the ecosystem that Richard was talking about. I totally agree with him. I think if you look at the future, you don't need to bet on graphene. What's clear is that we're moving into a much more sophisticated materials future where batteries, solar cells, wind turbines, renewable energies, health system materials, integrated sensors into the body, all of those things are going to require the same skill set that we're talking about is being kind of nourished in Manchester. Mm. And I think what we need to do in this country is say, okay, you know, there's just as much innovation actually in solar cell materials as there is in graphene. I feel like graphene shouldn't be given this special status in the UK. We should be giving materials research that status, because that is where the wealth is going to come from. And the ecosystem, you know, which one of those pans out to be the wealth creator for our children, we can't guess now. But what we do know is that that's how UK is going to make its way in the world, by having very skilled people who understand things from the atomic and nanoscale all the way up to a product scale. And we should nourish that.
Cynthia, how do you feel about this?
Yes, I agree with Mark, and I think, you know, we have several types of advanced materials and we have people highly skilled on that. We have a lot of expertise and we should make use of it, definitely.
Do you feel that the emphasis has been too strongly on graphene? As Mark was saying, you know, solar cells, again, particularly sort of organic solar cells, have definitely taken off in the UK academically. Did you feel that the emphasis on graphene perhaps at times is unhelpful?
Well, in solar cells, there are definitely materials, in particular in the last few years, that show very high efficiency and so on. But in the solar cells is made of different materials anyway. We can actually integrate graphene into these new solar cells, for example, as a transparent electrode or inside the structure of is. I think we need to look at advanced materials all together, not necessarily say, we should work only on graphene or we should work only on peroxide or something. I think we need to look at what we have available and eventually combine different materials into the products and so on. I don't think it's always, you know, a good idea to put a lot of money into one specific material.
So final question for you all is, what are you going to put your money on in terms of graphene's eventual breakthrough product? Mark, what do you think graphene's sort of most marketable product is going to end up being?
Oh, that's a
crystal
really
ball
tough.
Gazing time.
Oh, that's really tough. Okay, well, something close to my heart. We're working on wearable exoskeletons. So these will help people in the future to walk if they're getting infirm of walking, or to move their arms, or if they're injured. These are basically underwear, which actually creates a force to help you move. And what's hindering us is not the ability to make those fabrics exactly bespoke to you or me, and to design all the mechanisms that would do it, and the control and the electronics. It's all there. What's hindering us is the little actuators, so-called, that will make each link move in the fabric. And graphene has got some really very cool properties on that front, and I'm crossing my fingers that pans out.
Richard, what about you? Is there something which you think has really stood out?
Well, I think you know, we are going into a real transition in our energy systems, you know, and this is happening faster than I thought it would, you know, even five years ago. So the transition to harvesting solar energy, storing that in batteries, decarbonising transport, battery-powered vehicles. As I say, this is all really happening, you know, in terms of being optimistic. I was probably too pessimistic about this 5 years ago. And that there are all kinds of new technologies that will be required in that, for membranes, for transparent electrodes. I don't know which one of those graphene will turn out to be the right material for. I hope it's one of them, and it makes a big difference to making, you know, that transition that I think is so important happen quicker.
And Cinzia, you're working with ink, so presumably that's something that you think is going to take off.
Yes, hopefully in smart packaging that can be interacting and that is going to tell you when the milk is expired, or can track the food, or identification codes, for example. So hopefully in that area.
That's all we have for you this week. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can review it and be in with a chance of featuring in our weekly podcast column, Hear Hear. Just email podcasts@theguardian.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, so get involved. We want to hear from you. Till next week, many thanks to my guests, Professors Cinzia Kaziragi, Mark Miodovnik and Richard Jones. The producers were Rowan Slaney and Gabriella Jones. I'm Nicola Davis. This is Science Weekly.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.